welcome yet again to another episode of Unlimited Podcast Works. I am the admin and web host for this thing, and also the guy who works on the blog, Plaid, as you know. And with me is Ken, who's going to talk a little bit more about the Digital Devil Saga, specifically the novels for it that have been translated.
The Digital Devil Story novels, which were the precursors which eventually led to the Shin Megami Tensei series before the video games began and started off with a couple of novels.
Yeah. One of the wonderful things about the internet is that it's possible for people to set up these rather large translation projects, which meant that stuff that we would never see translated before, like, say, the Fate Zero novel or the Slayers novels, or even visual novels, finally have a group of people that can attack it from a bunch of different angles working on different chunks of it, which means it got translated. Can you tell us a bit more about the guys who worked on the project?
Well, it's hosted on this website. I believe it's also this person's blog. And it's kind of shady. I don't really know too much about the person who does it. Just they gave a quick introduction that they were in Japan and they hadn't found the novels. And since there were no translations of them anywhere or really much talk about them, even though they are an important part of what's becoming one of the bigger RPG series in America, he decided that in order to give some people some insight about the series is to post a translation of the novels, which some people like myself are very interested in. There are three novels, and unfortunately, only two of the novels he translated, and then the third novel, which he did say he was going to do. Unfortunately, right after he had posted the translation for the second novel, the blog was quietly stopped being updated, so I'm not really too sure what's happening or if we'll even ever see a translation of the third one.
Well, has another group arisen to take over where the first one stopped?
Well, again, the novels themselves are quite rare, at least as far as finding them here. They're not manga, they're actual paperback novels. Since Shin Megami Tensei is still a growing RPG series as far as gaining exposure in America, not many people really know about. There's several games in the series that have yet to come out here, and there's a lot of things that people may not realize or actively seek out to find more as to how it came about and what really started the whole thing.
Okay. I have a question about the novels. Was it done was it a vanity press type thing, or were they regularly published books with an ISBN and everything?
Well, as far as I know, someone posted a comment saying they originally started on a BBS, and eventually they were published elsewhere. But the novels, they actually date back to sometime in the early 80s, I think 84.
Okay. So when you said that they appeared on an internet board, are you talking about the later chapters? Were they written as some sort of round-robin fanfic type thing?
Again, since these novels are a little rare and not much is known about them, the origins as to how they came about is purely speculation. I'm just kind of going off more of what I hear, that someone did post something along the lines of that started off as on BBS, and eventually it gathered a lot of interest, which of course it did. I mean, eventually it spawned a very big RPG series from it, but again, a lot of it's not very known. But fortunately, at least we had the material. Some of the material out where people can read it.
All right. Well, I have a question. How much of the novels that are out there have been translated? Can you give us a rough estimate?
Well, Well, having done some research, there are the three original main novels, which are each the first one, and the villain of the novel is Loki. The second one, which takes place right after the first one, is Set, the Egyptian demon god, which you actually fight in some of the games. And then the third one, again, I don't really know too much about. The first one was fairly small, and the second one was a lot bigger, so I can only imagine the third one is a lot bigger. And then I know that there are some other novels out there called New Digital Devil Story. I'm not sure if it's how close it follows the original novels, whether or not it takes place afterwards, or if it's a completely different universe, or something along the lines of that.
So, you're not sure about the canonicity of these novels?
Correct. Again, it's very shady. Not much is known in the U.S. about them. It's very hard to get information other than... I even felt lucky to find out that, you know, that there were actually more novels than those. It's just, again, that this, the only thing that is for sure is that this is where it all began with, was Digital Devil Story.
On that? Okay. So, can you tell us a little bit more about the story of the novels? Is each one a self-contained little little book with its own characters? Or is it an ongoing character arc, you know?
It's an ongoing character arc. Essentially, it starts off like some other Shin Megami Tensei games. The original novel starts off in a high school with a high school student, and then he creates a program like the first Shin Megami Tensei game. That is has the ability to summon demons, and then when he ends up summoning one, he unknowingly realizes that that becomes a very big mistake, and even the demon kind of possesses him in that way because he kind of summoned him improperly and never binded a contract, which eventually he does realize towards the end of the novel that it was a huge mistake. Whereas the demon Loki tries to take over the world essentially, and while the story progresses, he meets a girl who later on you'll find out is a reincarnation of Inazumi, or you familiar with the female, the story, and eventually they get help from the Inazumi directly to battle the demon Loki, as well as finding the Sword of Fire. There's also demon summoning, such as the high school student, the main character. His favorite summoning, which you'll see a lot, is he summons Kerberos, which is the mythical dog who guards the gates of hell. And as the story progresses, more characters are introduced, but the books do focus on those two characters, the male and female, who are also tied to Inazumi and Inazagi.
Okay. So I have going off of that, will that story be told in any of the future games or in a prequel?
Well, again, these novels, not much is known about them. Again, there is the talk that did start on BBS. The novels, they get a little graphic, and it starts getting better, but there are some amateur things about it, and certain descriptions are, kind of, don't really make too much sense, but then again, that could be the translation. There's some trashy things about it even, but at the same time, it is kind of interesting despite how over the top and extreme it goes. So,
well, that sort of seems to be the case with a lot of the fan-made stuff. If this is a fan-made project, it might tell an interesting story, and it might be very interesting, but the quality of the prose might not be, you know, so great because they're not professional writers.
Yeah, that's exactly it, actually. Again, I do kind of believe that probably did start on a BBS, and then a lot of people were very intrigued with the idea. You know, the story involves, you know, demon summoning and computers, which was computers in the 80s were becoming a rapid thing, and then eventually progressed more in the 90s.
Going and speaking of that, back in those days, computers were seen as somewhat magical. Which is, and it was big news, you know, in Star Trek for them to have a computer that could do all those things. Then they took that to the next level, of course, in Star Trek: The Next Generation with computers that could do even more. And in the 90s, we have such wonderful movies as Hackers with people using computers for things that the computers at the time were not quite able to do, such as a fully animated graphical user interface, for example. So you have this one thing that's mysterious and exotic, like demon summoning, and then you throw in computers into the mix, and it's like an ice cream sundae.
Yeah, well, I'll give the Jill Devil story credit. It did seem a little bit more. They did try to give some explanation. For example, they were saying that you could translate certain magical scriptures and context into binary code. Okay. And there's also other parallels that they go into, such as, you know, every demon kind of lives in its own sort of parallel universe. That's which is how they're able to mix the different mythologies. For example, seeing, you know, demons like Loki and Set, and then eventually, even in the games, you see other demons such as Metatron and Lucifer and so forth. So the game does have a certain foundation as trying to explore or explain those things, but at the same time, you get the impression that the writer is a bit of an amateur, but he does get on to something fresh. And with the second novel, you definitely see a lot of improvements. It's still not quite up to par to this a certain professionalism, but at the same time, he's getting there. And unfortunately, the third novel is yet to be translated, so we don't really see how the author progressed as far as reaching the potential of his ideas and talent.
I might be going overseas for a while. Well, translating a novel might be a bit much for me this year as my Japanese continues to improve. It might be possible. I would probably do it as a wiki project, though. I'd buy one of the books, cut it apart, scan each page, and then post it up, and then people might be able to tackle each page in turn on the wiki if they wanted to. Do you think that there would be enough of a fan community to actually be able to give this a go?
Yeah, again, I mean, you know, you just kind of have to look around the best place. I mean, there are newer websites that are dedicated to the Shin Megami Tensei series, but at the same time, they just don't have access to those novels. And again, the novels were actually fairly short. I finished each of them in about 2 hours. I think the first one took me about maybe an hour, and the second one took me about 2 hours. So it didn't really feel very overbearing, but then again, I can only say how long the third one could be. And I know the third one, judging off the ending of the second book, probably deals with more than, you know, just one demon, and probably deals with a slew of problems.
Well, my question is this. Are these light novels? Is it mostly written in non-poetic, ordinary language with lots of people talking and that kind of thing?
Yeah, the format is pretty standard. It just, you know, it flashes to different characters' perspective, whereas, you know, it'll go into the main characters, and then you see, well, then you'll have a chapter where the villain is kind of discussing his plans and what he tries to do. So there's a lot, you know, going back and forth, but at the same time, it does maintain that mystery as far as you're not really too sure what's going to happen or where is it going to go.
All right, then. Cool. Well, have there been any more new ones in the series published recently?
Not as far as I know, not really. I know there was a new Digital Devil story, and that, and even that came to an end. Then eventually there was the anime OVA. It's very rare if you can find it, but it's not even really that good. It's based on the first book, and there's certain things cut out that make it very confusing and doesn't even really make sense at times. But at the same time, again, like the novel, while it may not be good, the concept is very interesting, and it's very interesting to see how it all started. Although the book, you know, because it does have those extra details, it does make it a lot better than just watching the anime, whereas the anime I could just say was, you know, okay or just mediocre. The book was actually kind of good, and then the second book was, you know, was decent. It was a lot better. And then the third book, well, I can't say because it's yet to be released. And then,
and it might be, you know, if there's a strong enough cult following for it over here, I'm sure eventually it will be translated.
Yeah, and that's what I'm hoping. And then there's also the new Digital Devil story novels, which don't, again, no one really knows anything about. As you can't find anything off of there, then I found a list of them on a website. But other than that, you know, once that took off, not only was there an anime OVA, there were two games based off of the original Digital Devil story novels called, I believe it was just called Megan May Tensei. They were for Nintendo. And from there, Atlus, the development team at the time, you know, they really enjoyed the concept so much that they decided to reinvent it, which is what is now known as the Shin Megami Tensei, otherwise known as True Guys Reincarnation. So it's kind of interesting, you know, we have a book which spawned an OVA and other novels, and then a video game based on that book, and then Atlus took that concept and took the original game and just reinvented it into a whole new world, which spawned many other games which share a lot of the same elements. The only thing that, again, that kind of, I just realized that kind of makes things interesting is, whereas the first two novels that I had read were, they got very gruesome, and I'm sure the, as far as reading the, about the original Megami Tensei and the Shin Megami Tensei games, there were some very graphic and even very questionable parts going on. I noticed that,
like what? What was so, uncomfortable about them?
Well, and, you know, in the novels, there's a lot of, like, heads exploding, decapitation, things of that nature, and then in the, I never played the Mega Man Tensei games, but I wouldn't be surprised there is a lot of thought-provoking themes. Again, it deals with demons. And then the Shin Megami Tensei, I know that there are other things that, you know, that kind of question religion that are very thought-provoking, and I'm not really too familiar with the violence level, and I do know that there's lots of talks about demons running rampant and killing people. And I did, out of the main series, the Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne, which was the first PS2 one, I do remember that there are scenes where you do see bodies flying and people getting killed. In Persona 2, which is another game in the series which came out for a PlayStation, the storyline centers around a serial killer known as the Joker. And I noticed that how all these extremes, but as the games kind of progressed, it seems like they seem slightly departed from the extreme of the, you know, stating back from the original novel, whereas Persona 3 did have its, you know, kind of dark themes. You didn't really see anything really explicit or graphic. Persona 4, there were its moments, but again, didn't really feel anything in Persona 4 was as gruesome as, you know, some of the earlier stuff. And I kind of wonder if this is, maybe they're trying to tone down that while keeping maybe some of the thought-provoking themes, or maybe they're again, going to go back to that in some of the future games.
It's a franchise. I understand them wanting to change the theme around a little bit between each game, because if it was exactly the same in every work, it might start to feel a little less effective. Yeah, what you were describing, the process of it shaping, you know, being changed, changing from a book to a show to a game, it kind of reminds me a bit of Parasite Eve, because that was released first as a novel in Japan, and now it's finally been translated into English here. Then it was turned into a TV movie. Then Squared noticed that, and then they turned it into a cinematic RPG, an action RPG hybrid, which I really liked, which was followed by a sequel, which was a very bad Resident Evil clone with very fast-moving AMC critters. And we haven't had much from that universe since that time, except for the upcoming PSP game, The Third Birthday, which is going to take Ayabria and pit her up against the Twisted, which are these kinds of time-traveling creatures that have started to show up in New York. And from the trailer, it looks like she's going to be able to use some of her parasite energy-based powers again.
That's very interesting. In fact, speaking of the TV movie, I remember being told that the little girl you see in the movie eventually becomes the villain of the first movie. I mean, or the first game.
It was Aya's sister that was the true. It was Aya's sister that was the true boss of Parasite Eve, but the only way to get to her was to make it to the top of the Chrysler Building. And that, my friend, is no mean feat, because the monsters in the Chrysler Building are so powerful that you will need to finish the game more than once to develop your gun and armor to the point where you stand a chance against them. I beat the game 3 times... and then I finally made it up to the top, which was not easy, particularly against enemies like that weird queen bee that could keep spawning drones to fight. And I was able to fight her sister, who was the true Eve that had hidden throughout the game, and I beat her after a 50-minute-long fight. And it was one of the best fights I've ever had in a video game. And I lost about 8 times before I beat her. It was a wonderful fight.
So, how do you feel about the? Do you feel that the you mentioned the second game? Do you think the second one did kind of depart from maybe the extreme or some of the things from the first game, other than just the gameplay? Do you feel storyline or art wise it departed at all?
Well, the first game has a lot of feel like an opera. And not just because the fake boss, the one that you believe is the big bad, Melissa Pierce, is an opera singer. It's not just that. It goes throughout the game. There are these grandiose spectacles, such as people bursting into flame, the Statue of Liberty being knocked over and covered in slime, and you guys fighting it out at her feet, and so on. It's a very, very apocalyptic in feel, especially since it came out in 19... The game is set in 1999, Christmas Eve. And the second game loses that. In addition to that, its score is not nearly as good as the first one. Matter of fact, the second one has a score that's mostly just ambient noise, but the second one feels like a bad episode of The X-Files, with government conspiracies. Actually, in the second one, there's this project called NOAA, where people can volunteer to become artificial neo-mitochondrian creatures. The big plus being that you get to become immortal, because neo-mitochondrian creatures and artificial ones don't die. But that doesn't mean that the creature that comes out at the end is anything like you, or even has the same personality. But I guess for people that are terminal and so on, it would be a chance for immortality that they would not turn away. Also, they really sexed up the main character for the sequel, which was... It felt like it was pandering, You guys have probably seen the video of that shower sequence where, you know, steam covers just the right places and you see the water beat off of her nubile young body and so on. It just feels kind of pointless, to be honest with you. And, yeah.
That's a very interesting comparison. So, is there anything else you'd like to touch on or ask as far as...
As far as Digital Devil?
Yeah, or comparisons go.
That was the one that just sprung into my head as we were that was the one that sprung into my head as we were talking about it. So, yeah, that is about it for me.
All right, and we'll post a link if anyone's interested in seeing these the original Digital Devil story novels that are translated on the web. The first two, anyway. And again, this is just more... It's a very good insight, being as this is how the Shin Megami Tensei series began. Began as a very small, novel that was posted somewhere. And eventually was published and spawned an anime OVA, which eventually spawned a video game, which eventually spawned a video game series which took elements of the original. And then... so forth and so forth. So much kind of came from it. So, whereas the quality may not really be up to par as far as professionalism, but at the same time, the idea and the potential, what you can see, is there. So, I think that pretty much wraps it up as far as Digital Devil Story. Mm-hmm. And here is...
Alrighty, I'm going to change the topic a little bit here. We won't be talking about the apocalypse or gods battling it out or new life forms trying to replace the previous ones that they have quietly existed alongside in secret. Instead, we'll be talking about a shoujo series. Now, you folks at home are probably saying, "Oh my gosh, Platt has never talked about a shoujo series on this program before, except for all the other times that he has." Well, this time I'm going to talk about Victorian Romance Emma, or Eikoku Monogatari Emma, and I'll be talking about the anime for it, because unfortunately I have not yet read the manga, which is an oversight that I should correct eventually. Matter of fact, at one of the anime clubs that Ken and I go to, we've been watching episodes of it. What are your thoughts, Ken?
I think it's pretty good. It's very interesting because it's one of the rare opportunities where you see the anime medium, at least as far as exposure in America, take something and not try to mix anything too serious or too silly or too extreme. And it's almost like watching a normal show, but at the same time, it's in the animation format and maintains and keeps a lot of the traditions of the time area that the show takes place in.
The original author hired a historical consultant who helped her keep the story accurate, and it has a lot of nods to that, such as a clockwork contraption that William uses to brew tea, or how Emma recycles tea leaves as a way to clean the carpet, so that the dirt will stick to the wet leaves, and then she can dust them outside and so on. And that's very interesting, and I certainly like that element of it. When I was watching it, I sort of thought that it was like a drawn version of a very good PBS limited series, or perhaps a Jane Austen novel. Yeah, but without the huge cast of characters that usually happens.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was touching base on originally, is that, there is a certain familiar territory, going into the show, and it's just, again, it's interesting because it is taking the form of the anime medium, and the cast characters are a little limited as far as, with that familiar territory, but at the same time, it is good that the storyline does stay focused on the two main characters, which one being Emma, of course, and then as well as the
William Jones,
and the scenario that they're in is, having to have those different classes and having that conflict with what would really make them happy despite their status that kind of keeps the two together or apart or both.
For those of you at home who are not familiar with this series, I'll go over a little bit of it. Emma is a maid who was a maid to William's governess. And when William paid his governess a visit, he met Emma and immediately fell for her. William is a member of the Nouveau Rich, a merchant family who has done very, very well. And technically speaking, their rank would be gentry. But among the upper class, the actual nobles would be people like Eleanor. And William's dad is very intent on matching him up with Eleanor, whose family is of high status, but who they have come under hard financial times, so they are willing to accept a commoner into their family. So you have a wonderful clash, which is interesting. One of the things that's common in a lot of these shows, which of course helps stretch it out a bit, is the main characters often aren't really sure if they deserve to be happy, and that's part of the reason why William doesn't pursue Emma as much as he should, or why Emma turns down his advances for the first few times. I think that she feels very guilty about being in love with him and being of such low class, but also I wonder if she truly feels that she deserves to be happy.
Yeah, and there are certain reactions that you may get out of that. For example, because the time period and how we feel and what we deal with, there may be times where it's like, well, why don't you say that or why don't you do that? But then again, it does kind of give you insight on how people feel and what does go on those times, which, something that the series touched on may have been a common thing, and also expresses the attitude of the people and the characters, as well as try to explain that so people can understand what's there.
Well, yeah. I was happy to find out, as I was watching the episodes, that there is a happy ending in which she and William finally do get together. I mean, sure, we sort of suspected that, but at the same time, this is anime, and anime does not always have a very happy ending. You have plenty of downer shows, like, say, Evangelion, where everyone except the main character and his object of affection, everyone except them end up dying, and so you sort of wonder going into this, will these two ever be happy? Will they ever know some actual contentment? And it's sort of a little satisfying to know that the answer is yes.
Again, because it does take that medium, there is a lot of, I don't know, or there's a lot of suspicion. And even if you knew prior that suspicion or, how it gets to that point is still there, whereas some of the American shows, the idea of them not getting together at the end would just come off very random or ridiculous. And there are very few shows that have ever really pulled that stunt, and probably a very scarce few. And I think whenever that does happen, a lot of times is not received well. So it's kind of interesting that it does kind of follow that American cliche, at the same time, because you are watching it on a different medium, you don't really expect, or you kind of even welcome that cliche more than you normally would.
Well, just the same though, they at least had to work for it. It didn't just happen easily. It wasn't like, say, A Knight's Tale, where the person effortlessly goes from a zero to hero.
Talking about that movie with Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
There's a, it's kind of funny. There's a scene after the credits of that movie.
No, I didn't know that. Why don't you tell the folks at home about that?
I guess it's kind of silly. There's this, you know, a little off topic. After the credits, there's a scene where all the supporting characters are sitting around this room having a farting contest, including one of the female characters. And then the last character gives a really weak one, and then the movie ends. That pretty much sums up how I feel about the movie, too.
I have nothing to say in regard to that. Yeah. Alrighty. So we're going to wrap up our discussion of Emma, but I have a surprise topic. I have heard from the folks on 4chan's JP that the translation of Demon Bane is entering its final stages, and you can see some of the characters from that in photo printouts on my wall over there. I am really looking forward to that. It is a visual novel, an adventure one, set in a very H.P. Lovecraft and Cthulhu mythos-inspired world, which means that in addition to the main character, you know, possibly getting it on with a romantic interest, you have a huge occult conspiracy, kind of adventure-slash-mystery-type gameplay, loads of text to read through, plenty of characters, and some interesting twists on the Cthulhu mythos world. For instance, Dr. West is there, but he tends to build giant robots and plays an electric guitar. But you still know it is Dr. Herbert West because of the way that they refer to him as the reanimator, and so on. One of the robots that he makes, of course, is a gynoid who falls in love with the main character. And, you know, there are these weird spins and twists on the Cthulhu mythos without. So, because it's got this very odd view of the universe on which it's heavily inspired, I'm looking forward to playing through it. The studio that made it, Nitro Plus, also gave us Chaos Head, as well as the Fate Zero novel. Yeah. Are you familiar with this kind of thing at all, Ken?
Yeah, a little. I'm always been very interested. It's just, again, it's takes some time, and also finding those it can be a problem. But again, you know, I've always been very interested in, and such as the Fate Stay stuff. I'm always willing to keep up to date with everything that goes on with that. So I'm very open to anything that plus, you know. Plus the effort that goes into translating those, I'm very interested in seeing what they actually show
us. We definitely respect the translators. And I was going to warn some of the people going into this that this game has some very disturbing, gross scenes in it because it's involving scenes of a sexual nature. Then it throws a monster into the mix, like, say, a Shoggoth, which is polymorphic and can take any shape. So you can understand, of course, this is Japan, too. So there are definitely probably going to be some moments that might make us wince a bit. But just the same, I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen in it and seeing what was changed and what was left out of the anime and what was done much better in the game. As I understand it, they're going to use the script from the PS2 port where it was rewritten to make it a lot better, but keep in the PC-only stuff, such as the adult scenes and so on. So that seems like it's a good balance to me.
I'm definitely interested in seeing what's being offered. You mentioned that there's going to be a PS2 version, you said?
Well, there already has been a PS2 version. However, it's all ages only, which means that they had to take out the adult scenes that were in the 18 and up PC release. That's how it often is with a lot of visual novels, because as one of our guests said in an earlier show, Sony, Microsoft et al. Don't want adult only games on their consoles with people having sexual relations. They tend to take those scenes out for the console release, which I find irritating. You know, what if instead of just shooting people in the head all day, what if in the course of a video game I wanted to my character to get physical with somebody else? What's really bad about that? What's worse about that than just the unending violence that seems to happen in every other game? That's a big question I have.
Yeah, that's that is a very good question. There are again I. not even really sure why Japan in Japan they do that with the PS2 versions, because
because the console maker won't license the game if they release it with the adult scenes in. You remember that whole hot coffee conflict with Grand Theft Auto?
Yes.
Yeah, where you have the least erotic adult scenes ever, and it's a big deal. Yeah, or say, for example, something like Bully, where you can match up the main character with anyone in the game universe, and that's a big issue too.
Well, my curiosity is not so much American licensors, but over in Japan, why would they have that problem so much?
Well, the makers of the console determine whether or not a game can be licensed for that console. They're the guys that sell the SDK, the software development kit. And as a result, they have, unfortunately, a large degree of control over the contents of a game. Most of the time, if you submit an idea, they won't have a problem with it. But if it has adult scenes in it, where people are doing the horizontal hop, they tend not to like that, and they say no.
Well, I was under the impression that different countries kind of have their different licensing policies, such as certain games that may not get licensed here, they can get licensed in Europe, which there are some evidence of.
Well, on that topic, the Nintendo DS has had an interesting history, and you would figure that a portable console with a touch-sensitive screen would have some interesting games, let's just put it that way, for it. And there was a witch detection game where you had to know, you were able to find out whether or not a young lady was a witch or not by poking her and massaging her and doing all these other strange things to her with the touch-sensitive screen and the stylus. But unfortunately, Nintendo stopped the development of a doujin game. You see, the DS is a simple system, so it's easy to make games for, where you can actually do more things with an avatar on the screen than just poke them with a stylus. So, unfortunately, Nintendo blocked that. They just didn't seem to think it was appropriate for their console.
I guess I can kind of see where you're going with that. But, what do you think they maintain that for the PC releases, though?
The wonderful thing about the PC is it's not a platform that is exclusive to any video game console manufacturer. For instance, Microsoft may make software for PCs, but a PC is not exclusively licensed to Microsoft. I mean, you can run Linux or BEOS or other things on it. And on that topic, it's interesting that I mentioned Windows, because just about all of the visual novels that are out there are written for Windows, and they seem to run best under Windows XP with Japanese language support enabled on it. With Vista, you end up running into more hiccups because of just various little things. But that's also, when the game comes out first for the PC, with the adult scenes perhaps to attract more attention. Then later on, when they try to go for an all-ages console release, they already have a built-in group of fans who will be interested to see all the extra stuff that made it into the console-only release.
That's a very good point. So, what are your expectations as far as this game goes?
Well, I guess it will be seeing the main character, Daidoji Kuro, team up with the human avatar of the Necronomicon, Al-Azif, or Al, the girl with the green eyes and the purple hair, to take on the members of the Black Lodge, and who are trying to use Cthulhu and the other great old ones to open up Yog-Sothoth, who is the all-in-one and the one-in-all. The gate which to everything, to let the outer gods into our reality. So it'll be a nice big cosmic battle with lots of adventure and action and some very, very disturbing scenes. Yeah. So hopefully it'll be as epic as I hope it will, as the last episode of the TV show was.
Is there anything else you'd like to touch ground on?
No, that's about it. I think that that might be it for this episode.
All right, and that concludes our broadcast.
Yeah, thanks for tuning into episode 8. Stop.